the Parota and the Aro. One problem I can say about the Sukkah, and I understand that, sometimes like the Yibay Matalah and the Hot, and I understand that, taking one of those aside though, becoming the other artwork now, all the rector has to do in remainder, is you're saying there's a problem with that also?
Yeah, you're just going to have pictures of animals in the jungle.
Right.
The Baruch Hu's beautiful world, with trees and rivers and birds and animals in the jungle. So that's permissible at home.
But not in the shul.
But in shul, Kevarachal is fine at home. But
so you're, really, shul. You're saying in essence that really, I mean, it comes out that really 90% of the shuls are really not following things the way they should be. You're saying the best way is really
simple as nothing, really. That's right. Okay. Right. Reason talk to we believe in a monotheistic religion. God is invisible and he has no body, and we don't need any pictures in the show.
Okay. Once you have a
show,
you have something like that, you based on
something.
Is there any problem
during
that, you know, their age?
What are the parochas doing? They have the effect on God. They should try to convince the rabbi that they shouldn't do that parochas. There are many shows that have 20 parochas. That's all I'm not saying.
First of all, if it's specifically, let's say, has no intention to be based on Zal, he just decides, like, let's say, they're lying because of Yehuda. And it's not really the purpose of based on Zal, so that would some of the Murtah, right?
Don't know. The Shach wrote the Bach, but it's not Murtah. He said, you're not allowed to make the images of any of the Yud based on Zal. Since traditionally they always assume that the lion is one of the Yud based on Zal. Bach said, you're not allowed to make lions. That's not the line they used to hold up the Teres Adibus on every Yom Kodesh. Bach holds it itself.
But the Shach is passing.
Cool. Shach said, yeah, Mikra Adibus.
So there's no reason to, I mean, to... No, I'm just saying, I mean...
Bach.
Yeah, but if all the Oren HaKodesh at least are not having youth based themselves to start making a whole trend through shuls to tell them to start switching, if Mikra Din is okay. I mean, how does that make...
We can encourage them to do other things. Encourage them to have other designs. Kind of like Borah. Should leave it out.
Is it easy to look at some OT relating to Yishin Tafton and only Talon Yisiyah?
Yeah, probably.
So what's the word he means? So why can't you, I mean, like, unfortunately, why can't
It demonstrates that we violated an affair by engaging the people to make it for us. We should at least hide our sins. You shouldn't advertise this. It was made by people for sure. It wasn't made done. You don't buy it in the A&T.
Is all this only shot for the Honor Kodesh and the Parochet, or is it any, like, some shows have, like, in the roads, like, the wooden sections have, like, carvings out of, like, shofar or menorah or something?
Yeah, that's fine. I don't think that's going to divert people's attention.
That's what's really only what they'll see.
Yeah, the Rabban should try to get the Balabatim to understand where they should put their efforts into design and where not, and what design is and what design is not.
Before we mentioned the show,
so
if there was a series of, let's say, wedding invitations,
not really. You're still going to have the two problems. Number one, it's not really for educational purposes. And what did you have to? What would they have to write less than until the show? You can write the wedding invitation without
the. You're going around the event of
the chinuch. Right, the chinuch, and you have to quote a post-it.
And state the show. How we define is that one of the.
Voracious, the most. The show. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the whole commission. Voracious alone is good. So that's quite a lot.
On the Toramantle itself, there's a lion or something. You have a problem with kissing his spar.
No, not a problem. No, just according to the bath, it wasn't proper in the first place.
You have to worry about people with t-shirt frame or shirt. People may wear tools that have designs on them.
Sure, you need to divert people's attention. Sure, the
fact. Many shuls have designs of like the Belt Shvatim, you know, the symbol for each one, you know, not Kali Oyala Shulzah and so forth. That's also, I think, it's
okay.
That is okay.
Yeah, the only question is, where is it? Is it right in front of you that it's going to, it may divert your attention, but then there's probably a taste because you already have shul. That's not crappy. It's supposed to be Machavan and Shul, it's Davin.
I don't see how this is going to divert attention. They're not all looking at the... I mean, they see it once, and then they continue dabbling. I don't see people looking at the owner.
It depends how...
In awe.
It depends how attractive it is.
There's a Okay, but their Issa, for example, the 12 mezuzahs is a special Issa in general, and you're saying there's another Issa, perhaps, without getting the 12 mezuzahs, that it will divert attention. So you have to decide whether it's diverting attention.
Right. You have to decide where it is and what the nature of the picture is, whether it's going to divert attention or not. So parenthetically, there is an issue that's not really in the Geis of Beis HaKnesses. Is it permissible to use Dabashuris for other purposes other than writing Tanakh? The Rambam, in one of his Igarot, one of his letters, quotes a minig, a very old minig that the Rishgash had and had before him. And this minig is quoted in Yeridei as well, Reish Pei Dalet, in Hilchos Seder Torah, by the Ramo, not to use Tzav Ashuris for other purposes other than Tanakh. The Ramo himself writes in his Tshuvas that he was insistent on printing his Tshuvas in Rashi script. He didn't want to print it in block letters, because he says some of the block letters are so close to Tzav Ashuris, it's Kimat the same. And he thought that the minig was that you're not supposed to use Tzav Ashuris for anything other than Tanakh. Others write it differently. Some Sefer's children write in the Igra Sefer, that's a collection of letters from the Sefer family, so they write that in one of the letters they write that the father that some Sefer used to send out when the children got married, he sent out wedding invitations that were handwritten. They didn't print the invitations, and they were handwritten, Bedafking Tzav Ashuris. But the meaning is you don't use Tzav Ashuris for other purposes. For purposes other than Divrei Mitzvah. But an invitation to a wedding is a Dvar Mitzvah. That's what the Chassam Sofer felt. And others hold not so, like the Ramo. Even a Dvar Mitzvah is not proper. Divrei Torah maybe would be, but the Ramo is even Machman is true, on Divrei Torah. So others say, no, Divrei Torah, maybe you can be Mekel on that. But the wedding invitations, perhaps one should be Machman. That's why many on the dark say not to use Tzav Ashuris in writing wedding invitations. Pardon me?
Same question.
Right. So it's a divine mitzvah, but it's still not divrei Torah, it's not Tanakh. From the standpoint of the Chassam Sofer, that would be permissible. It wouldn't be a violation of this meaning, and according to speaking, there's nothing wrong with using Tzav Ashuris for anything you want. But it's an old meaning from the days of the old Rishonim. That's the question, whether using Tzav Ashuris for Ketuba would be a violation of the minhag or not. In a shul, there is a question, when the Kohanim go to Duchen, do they have to stand on a platform or not? Rabbi Avadi Yosef has a shuva about this, where he quotes a likud of Achrayim, and it boils down to the following, that Ashkenazi Achrayim hold that there's no need at all. By the Spardish Achrayim, there's a minhag. But some say that when the Kohanim is over the Duchen, the word Duchen means a platform. That's not some. This was the practice all the time. The Kohanim went up to Duchen, they would go on top of the platform. The question is this a din? Is it a din? Is it a minigun? Just go. That was the practice. The Kohanim stood up, that everybody should hear them. They would stand on an elevated place. The Nachkamini is, what if you have a shul where the young Kurdish doesn't have any stairs going up? Do you have to duck to take a platform and put it there for young Kurdish so that when they come in Duchen, they will be standing on a platform? So because there are some Sfaradish Achaim who are mocked about that, that's why many Sfaradim are more medactic than Ashkenazim. I remember I had one davening in Kol Torah, and they were duchening. So they had Ashkenazim and Sfaradim duchening there. So at first they let, and there was only so much room on the platform for people to stand and duchen there. So at first they let all the Sfaradim go up. Sfaradim go first by duchening. Because some Sfaradish Achaim hold you have to stand on the platform. And then, when all the Sfaradim got up, and they were satisfied to them, there was room for a couple of Ashkenazim, so they stood up, and the rest of the other Ashkenazim stood on the floor. That's, most of the Ashkenazi Achanim hold that there is no such case.
The Sfaradim were not good, they were not
good. They hold Mishum Din. They say, you're not allowed to do them. The Kohanim may not say the Brochus unless there's an elevation. They say it's a Din. Some Achrayim quote in the name of the Zohar that a distinction between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash. If you have a Beis HaKnesses, the proper thing is that the Shulchan, where you're going to read Kriyat HaTorah from, should be on an elevated platform, Zecha L'mayim HaSinah. It's a din, not Samadur, it's a din. In the proper construction of the Beis HaKnesses, just like HaSinah was an elevated place, and the Torah was given from HaSinah to the Yisrael who were down below, so too, if it's a Beis HaKnesses, you should have like that. If it's a Beis HaMedrash, then there's no need. Like over here in Beis HaMedrash, we don't have what we learn all day long. So when we dive in the morning, we don't have an elevated platform for the Shulchan. So that's what the Zohar makes that distinction between a Beis HaKnesses and a Beis HaMedrash. Here is a whole discussion in the Zohar. The Achrayim quoted, we have the staircase with the elevated platform in front of the Yom Kodesh. which is the proper thing to have, how many steps do you have to have going up to the Aron Kodesh? What's the minimum? What's the maximum? The whole discussion. 3, 6. Minimum of 3, maximum of 6. Big discussions about that when you start to build the shul, it's not so fast. Many shuls, the Institute of the New Minig, they want to have the Israeli flag in the shul in order to demonstrate that we are behind the need of each other. How can you have the Israeli flag without the American flag? So you have two flags. On one side you have the Israeli flag, one side you have the American flag. So the shaila is this permissible or not? So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous shul about this. And he says he doesn't think that it belongs, he doesn't think that either flag belongs in the shul. That's anti-Medina. He just says, it doesn't have any place in the shul, it doesn't beautify the shul. You want to make a political statement that you support the Medina or something. He felt that it didn't belong in the shul. What do you say? He thinks that it doesn't belong. There's an issue regarding the menorah, son of the chazan. Many of used to have lights where the chazan davens. Is it permissible to have a menorah which is Zugmas HaMenorah in the Beit HaMikdash, which has 7 kanim? So the Gemara learns that from a pasuk that that's an issur. You're not permitted to make a menorah that's Zugmas HaMenorah in the Beit HaMikdash. And even though it's not made from gold, it's made from a different metal, it's still forbidden. The question is, but what if it's an electric menorah? So this is absolutely not Zugmas Beit HaMikdash. This is a big machlokes among the recent Gedolim. You have some of the Maromekim written down here. Yeah.
Is there a problem with
That's also a question. In Europe, they always used to have separate. The Chazan would daven in the front, and the Kriyas HaTorah would be from the middle. And then, when the Reform movement began in Hungary, so that was one of the major shinuim that they instituted, that they had the Chazan also daven from the middle. So the Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer who were fighting against Reform, they were absolutely opposed to this. They said, Mamish, you're not allowed to take such a position. You're not allowed to be a rabbi in a shul like that, where the chazan davens in the middle. It's absolutely connected. Either then they found that the Rishonim say the Seirish in the Migdal Lois, he writes like that on the bottom of the Rambam in one place, as well as in the Abu Dram. They both write the Chol Orei Svarai. This was the minig all over in Spain, that the chazan would daven from the same place, in the Bima, where the Balkor would lay in Kriyas HaTorah. So they write with a straight face, it's that Torah site. Not true. I can be it's not true, of course it's true. They were so anti-reform that they couldn't visualize that it could be so angry. So that's where Moshe takes a mild position on this issue. So he says the proper thing is, like we always used to have in Europe, you have the Balsillah down in the front, and the Kriyas HaTorah in the middle. But if you can't hear, if the Chazan is going to down in the front, such a big shul, or such a noisy shul, whatever the case happens to be. Ramosha writes, the world doesn't come to an end. It's nice. The same issue was discussed by the Minchas Yitzchok, by his dying wife, from Eid Acharedes. He gets so excited. He talks to all the Hungarian Acharedes and say that everything is a toy slave and they never had it, never will have it. Talk to Yehard La Yavar, all of the from the Chacham Sofer's children, from the Zayin Club, from the Talmid Chacham Sofer, from the Maram Shik, they were so hot about this issue. And Ramosha doesn't get so excited. I say, it's not proper. But if you have no bravery, so if you have no choice, so it's acceptable. Yeah, the Gemara says the distinction that the menorah is made from gold, then the gvim and the kaptorim are from amiyake. If the menorah is made from other materials, then you don't make gvim, kaptorim, or from. So we're not permitted to make a menorah that's zugmas ha-menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. If you're going to have a gold menorah in front of the Baal Tzibur and it's not going to have gvim, kaptorim, or from, then it's mutter, because that's not zugmas ha-menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. But if you're not going to make one from gold, it's going to be from something other than gold. That since the Beit HaMikdash, that's the way you would make it from other metals rather than gold without green kaftar masoch. So then it is called Zugmas Beit HaMikdash. The dispute that they had was, what if it's electric? Electric is a gamrei, not Zugmas Beit HaMikdash. So that was a big dispute. It's generally assumed that it's not from.
According to Rav Moshe's tshuva on this, would he consider by taking that minute of sorry today not proper in a sense? Because
no, that's their meaning. That's by the side, if that was a minig, that's a minig. He's pretty mild about it.
I understand that point. Would it make sense to say that the Ashkenazim would... He's saying even Ashkenazim, it doesn't make a difference, even though the Reform were makbid as one of their major shinui. That's the point. I mean, I think it was Sfarim to be made, but the question is, Ashkenazim, if you done an Ashkenazic shul, he still says it's not considered... A major.
He says the meaning is that you don't do it, but if they're doing it for a strong purpose, because the acoustics are such that the people just can't hear.
Is that the same way you pass in from the Indian of having a, what do you call it, a wedding in the shul? Is that the basis also that your form I think, I don't know if Sfarim had it or not, but the Sfarim started making weddings in shuls, and therefore they answered it.
Yeah, for years in Eastern Europe, they didn't have weddings in shuls. And then the Reform, that was one of their changes. That was Dugmas, the church. Because by the Goyim, that's one of the seven sacraments that you have to get married in the church. Those who get married. Either you don't get married or you get married in the church. Either one or the other. So the Reform instituted this, that they should get, they changed the meaning that they should get married in the shul. And they meant it, Lehidam Islam. So the Talmid Chacham Sofer got so excited about this, that it's a Nisus, can I get it in? I said the Feirish and the Maril that people get married in the shul. So I said again, Tosafot. It's not. That's the Feirish that they got married in the shul.
I was going to say, like, that type of thing, when you say, let's say, even they did it 300 years ago, but still, since now they're doing it Reform, which is permissible, it becomes Chukus Akram. Yes, so I don't understand why they deal with it that way. The point is that it becomes a Chukus Akram, if it's not allowed to be done, even if it was done 400 years ago.
Yeah, that's the question. If you have a minig that it originally started out as Harisus Hadas, even though now it doesn't mean that, so it still remains Chukus Akram. But the question is, but this minig existed so many years before a minig to get married in the shul. And there were people in Germany, they had the minig for many, many years. Even the same time that in Eastern Europe, they didn't have it, they got married after somewhere else. But in Western Europe, many German communities, they did get married in shul. But some of those communities that are doing it, l'shem, l'hidam, islam, nothing, of course, it's so, no, some, they have a shul, have a catering hall, and where else are they going to have the wedding? After they end up in the street, they'll rent another hall. If they're not doing it, l'shem, l'hidam, islam, nothing, so they're following a different minig, the minig in Germany. Many say Mario to say that everything is a Torah study. You can disagree if they don't like it, say it's a Torah study. Sometimes there is a Torah study. There's a Torah study. There's a Torah study. A lot of times we deify, we sanctify things that are mamish misprim. Rabban and Rosh Yeshiva, Mikto Pulim and Rambam, the Taishas, and mamish misprim. The people paskin based on a misprim. The Torah says, you have to be made aware that it is a Torah says, but if it's something that you don't agree with, and it's clearly not a Torah says, you don't say it's a Torah says, you say that's what he said, and I disagree.
There's a museum in the Yerushalayim Tower, they go around building candles of Beit HaMikdash, and they have a big menorah there.
He's they plan to use it in their body.
I think so.
Okay, right. That's your committed to do it. You're making it and you plan to use it in the Beit HaMikdash. You plan explicitly not to use it in the Beit HaMikdash, then it would be in the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah. There is a din in Yeridei that out of covet on Sefer Torah, you're not permitted to turn your back to the Sefer Torah. You have to always be facing the Sefer Torah. And this is out of COVID. The Tazir and Reish Pei Beis discuss knowledge in Yeridei, discusses the common practice that the Rav gets up in shul and he gives a drasha facing the Olam with his back towards the Aron Kodesh. It doesn't have his back to the Sefer Torah. The Taz says that it's mutar because the Sefer Torah is in the Rishus Acheres. The Torah is in the Aron Kodesh, the Aron Kodesh is 10 tefachim full and it's Dalar Adal tefachim deep and the Book of Shabbos that constitutes a different Rishus. It's in a different room.
The
Jewish
Kizahar
is
in the same room, it's a different room.
We
have that problem we had before, but the
Aron Kodesh
being in the same room.
Well, as long as the Aron Kodesh is in the same room, that's okay. The Aron Kodesh is in the same room, but as far as the Bidoyim to the Sefer Torah, there's a Tazir that that's permissible. Some Achrayim are insistent, and they, so same story, they say that's only the rabbi who speaks every week, and it's his job to give Techacha to the Balabakim. But let's say you have a bar mitzvah bar, so they're only getting up in the front of the Olam once on the day, this is on the Shabbos of the bar mitzvah, he's going to say Shkibul Torah, so he should not have his back to the Aron Kodesh. If he wants to get up and speak, they should have a stender on the side, and he should face sideways, he shouldn't have his back. I thought if anything, it should be Fakirat, maybe the rabbi's the Kviyas, maybe it should be Mochamer, if it's the Kviyas, it should be more of a Kula. So I don't know, that's how some Achrayim say that Bar Mitzvah Bacher should not do it. Achrayim from about 200 years ago suggests like that. Bar Mitzvah Bacher should not. The Taz is only Mako, so that's the rabbi's job to give Tachol. But there is such a din that it's not proper to have your back to the Sefer Torah. The question is, what about when the Leinin Kriyas HaTorah? So the Sefer Torah is on top of the Shulchan, which is on top of the Bina. Is that also considered in a different Rishut? Or not? The Bina, but the Shulchan, is that considered a different Rishut? So the Bina Gadim has this stuff. Because I tell you, at the end of this packet of Mar Mekayim, it's the last 2 pages, you must say, the Tardis Mordechai, where he discusses this. And his Beit HaKnesses in Satmar, some great Chassidish Tzaddik came and he started making a whole fuss about the way the seats were arranged, and he said, well, it was all based on the Beit HaKnesses in Sigit, and that's the way it was by the Yetziv Lev, and he has a whole Arichas with this Prima Gadim and a whole Chagadim. So the people got to write yourself about that. Are you permitted to have your back to the Sefer Torah when it's on a shulchan, which is on top of the Zina? Rav Soloveitchik saw that even if it's mutter, he pointed out even if it's mutter, there's a score that you're not getting to Kriyas HaTorah. If the person doesn't say the Sefer Torah b'shas Kriyas HaTorah, because there is a Gemara in Brachos in the first Perek, where the Gemara says that one of the Amoraim, when it was time for Kriyas HaTorah, he wasn't interested in hearing Kriyas HaTorah. He turned his back to the Sefer Torah, and he was learning Torah Shabbat Peh. He said, "Anam b'didan b'ne b'ditu. I'll learn my things, and they'll learn their things. I don't need to Kriyas HaTorah." So he says, "Akasha," but the Gemara, and that Gemara in Brachos in the first Perek, how can it be? But the Gemara says, "Straight to Daf Lamites, Kim Shinit Nach Sefer Torah, also the Sefer Afilu b'divrei Torah." Once you open up the Sefer Torah for Kriyas HaTorah purposes, it's forbidden for all the people in Shul to talk and learning. To talk, period, or even to talk and learning is also taken. This Amayra say, "Anam b'didan b'divrei," I'll learn my Torah Shabbat Peh, and he's going to learn Torah Shabbat Peh. So we give different answers. One of the answers was that that Amara was blind, he didn't study north, he had no shaykhs with Torah Shabbat, he was Pasuk and Kriyas HaTorah, so he had to learn Shabbat Peh, and that's Lashon, Anam B'Didan, I'm blind, so I have to learn Torah Shabbat Peh, even B'Didhu, and the rest of the people can see, so they have the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. There are different tirutim from the Mishnah Berurah, quote some of the tirutim. It's Megillah Halacha. So one of the answers that Tosafot gives is that the only time it's forbidden to talk is if you're facing the Sefer Torah. If you have your back to the Sefer Torah, that's the head. But the Amora in the first Perek in Brachos said, it sounds like Pater, no? If he's coming back to the Sefer Torah, then he talks, sounds worse, no? But he's facing the Sefer Torah, and he's whispering, so it doesn't look so bad as people look in. If he turns his back to the Sefer Torah, it should be worse. But that's the Tosafot's right one Perek. That's what the Amora says in Brachos. It's Rav Yosef, I think. He turned his back to the Sefer Torah, and then he spoke, why? When you turn your back to the Mutter, why is it more Mutter? It should be more Rasa. So Rachel thought, based on the Pasuk in the Chenya, and Perek says, down from the Pasuk when they were about to land, it says they opened up the Holy Temple for high holiday. It's the Bai Sheni. They started the Avodah on Rosh Hashanah. So they gave Kriyas HaTorah. Ezra was the kohen who got the first Ali, and it says, Baruch HaShem Avodah. He describes in Sefer Nehemiah the whole Kriyas HaTorah on Rosh Hashanah and Beit HaMikdash. He says that everybody was facing the Pnei Melav Sefer. Everybody was facing the Sefer Torah. So there she thought that perhaps that place is in Sefer Torah, that that's the equivalent. That the Mitzvah of the Kriyas HaTorah is only if you're facing the Sefer Torah. If you're not facing the Sefer Torah, you're not part of the Minyan for Kriyas HaTorah. If you're not part of the Minyan, then you can talk all you want anyway. If you are part of the Minyan, then you have to pay attention. Then you have to listen to the Kriyas HaTorah. So that's what he said, that so if you have a shul and you have the beam over here, the people that sit in the front, so the proper thing is that they should turn around during Kriyas HaTorah. They shouldn't have their back to the Sefer Torah. They should turn around and face the Sefer Torah. So he said that whenever he pays attention, whenever he remembers, that he always used to sit in front of the shul. Whenever he would be aware of it, he would always turn around. But a lot of times he would forget and he wouldn't pay attention. He would say that with his back to the Sefer Torah. He says the more correct practice is to turn around to face the Sefer Torah. Sure. That's an issue all over. This piece at the end, he quotes another. The Morgan Avram and the Taz both have a meaning from the Levush, they quote. That it's not proper to have people seated, the Stardom on Machbendat, it's not to have any seats between the Bima and the Yoren Kodesh. No one should be sitting. People should sit on the Stars, but not in the Sun. And a lot of Ashkenazi shows they're in violation of that Levush. So that's what this Siddush Rebbe came, they made a whole tumult and Takna. How come they had people sitting over there? So he tried to be Yashu. Whenever possible, it's not proper. Give different reasons why it's not proper.
No. It's supposed to clarify, you indicated that the whole point was to face the Sefer Torah during the priest's Torah. In most Ashkenazi shuls, as you've already mentioned, there's one place to be in one to the Amud, and generally speaking, this is a face forward. So the 20 architecture, very often, there was just one bima, the chairs were facing towards the central bima. So the center was different. So you think, is that more correct? In other words, the way Ashkenazans have it, a lot of people will be like our base measures, sort of 90 degrees to a degree of stars. So everybody will be facing forward, the Mitzrachon, as opposed to facing towards the Bima. So I'm saying it's better that all the chairs should be facing
towards the Bima. They shouldn't have their backs to the center.
Right. Other than that, it doesn't matter if it's not 180 degrees.
Yeah. I think so. one of the big changes that the reform introduced in the architecture of the shuls in Europe was that the bima b'yemsa, that for generations, they always used to have the bima with a hanfiyatatar in the middle of the shul. It doesn't mean the dead center of the shul. You don't measure from the front to the back and put it right in the middle. It means it should be meruchok a little bit from the shulchan in the front, from the omen in the front of the chazan balim. Should be separated a little bit, so you should be able to do hakofis on Shmini Atzeret, on Hashanah Rabbah. Be able to do hakofis on Hashanah Rabbah. And then the reform introduced the change, and they moved the beam all the way up to the front. So this is one of the big things again about some sefer, and something that some sefer was storming about that. So Mikra Din, you look in the Rambam says the reason why you have in Hilchos Tefillah, he writes the reason why you have the beam of the Emsa. Is simply that everybody should be able to hear the Baal Torah and the Rabbi when he speaks. The Chazan, apparently, the Rambam wasn't bothered if you don't hear the Chazan. The Chazan comes all the way up in the front, so he didn't care so much for the Chazan. But the Rabbi in the Baal Torah was laying and speaks from the Bima, so he wanted everybody to hear the Divrei Torah. So the Kesef Mishnah writes on the side of the Rambam, since that's the whole reason why. So if you have a little Shulchala, it's two by nothing, everybody's going to hear everybody anyway, so there's no need to have Bima B'Yemsa. So he writes, and all over in Sfarad, they didn't have a beam of the emsa because the shuls were so small. It wasn't necessary. The acoustics were good and the voice carried and there wasn't a problem of hearing anybody. But when the reform came and they changed the minhag, so the Chacham Sofer got very angry about changing the minhag, especially changing the structure of a shul. That was a big potato. That's what the Imre Yosha points out. Rameir Ari points out in his shul is there is a din, Hakol Diksav, Miyad Hashem Alay Haskil. The Pasuk says in Divrei Hayamim that David HaMelech transmitted the Megillah Sefer, special Megillah Diksab that he was given by the Navi, I think God HaNavi, gave him a Megillah Diksab after how to build the Beit HaMikdash, and he transmitted this Ksav to his son Shlomo HaMelech. And the Gemara says in Chulin, in the beginning of Kisoy Yadam, and the Gemara Sukkah has like that, based on that pasuk, Hakol Diksab, Mi'ad Hashem Alay Haskel, there's a separate issue to be Mishana anything in the Tzur Beit HaMikdash. That's what the Yerba Yosha says, that the Gdolim are very machted about changing anything in the structure of the Beit HaKnesset. Sometimes not a change. You add on another bench, take off a bench. That's not a change. You have to ask the Shaila what constitutes a change one time. A lot of times people don't realize they're making major changes. Sometimes it's not a change at all, and they're about to make a big fuss. So that's what you have to ask the Shaila, what's called a change, what's not. That's why the Chacham Sofer got so angry when the reform moved the Bima back to the front. So he said, no, it's not right. What the Rambam wrote, what the Kesef Mishnah wrote, it's not correct. The real reason why you have to have Bima B'Yemsa is not just in order to hear the Baal Torah, in order to hear the Rabbi. It's rather Dugmas Beis HaMikdash. Just like in the Beis HaMikdash, the Mizbeach was B'Yemsa, so too you have to have the Bima B'Yemsa. So the Nesiv has a true, what he points out in his Nesha Dover, where he points out the Bi'ur Agro on Dini HaKofis, when you go Hashanah on Hashanah Rabbah. So the Vilna Goyim seems to assume also like this some Seifah. That's how the Hungarian Balabatim said. The Vilna Goyim knew how to learn. He was going to the graces of some Seifah. That's the way they put it. I'm sorry, it was passing very good. So the Nesiv points out this Bi'ur Agro on Hilchos Hashanah, where we think so something like that, that the Bima that we have, what we lay in Kriyas HaTorah, is Dugmat HaMizbeach. What's the connection? What's it got to do with anything? We say in the, what do we say this, in the Slichas or the Kinnis? I forgot it. I think in the Kinnis of Tisha B'Av we say, Ein Lo Nashir Rak HaTorah Hazeh, the whole Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. The only thing that was left in the Beit HaMikdash is, Kosla Maravi, is the Arch of Titus, the picture, is the Sefer Torah. What does the Sefer Torah do with Beit HaMikdash? He says the only thing you have left in the Beit HaMikdash is the Lulav and the Esrei. What does it have to do with the Beit HaMikdash? Tefillin. Has nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash. So what is the Sefer Torah? The answer is no. The Sefer Torah was the center of the Beit HaMikdash. The whole Beit HaMikdash is a Mishkan HaEidus. They have the Luchos HaEidus. So the Sefer Torah is the center of attraction in the Beit HaMikdash. So that's what the Vilna Gaon writes. Ein Lo Nashir Rak HaTorah Hazeh. The only thing you have left over is the Sefer Torah. What do you mean the Sefer Torah? To put it in the museum and to leave it there? No, to lay it from the Sefer Torah. So it's only going right in the Bi'ur Agro. That's why the Shulchan, the Bima with the Shulchan, where we lay, in the place where we learn from the Sefer Torah, that's the Shir from the Beit HaMikdash. So that's why, just like in the Beit HaMikdash, they made HaKofis on Hashanah Rabbah, they made HaKofis around the Mizbeach, so too, we should make HaKofis around the Bima, which would be the answer. That's supposed to be Dugmas HaMizbeach. But that's the Kteira that the Chacham Sofer had, that the later Achronim pointed out, that you should try to follow that, the Din of the Yom.
Which would be better, the main six or from the middle, in which case you have all the people who are in front facing the wrong way, you know, or is it better to lean in front and so everyone's facing the same door?
No, that would still be better to have it in the middle. Facing the wrong way, so you'll try to educate them that they should face the right. And I remember as a child in different shuls, they used to have, it was a common practice to have. Now I don't daven in so many different shuls. I daven in yeshiva, they don't have it. It's a common practice to take out the, let's say on a day on which you learn two or three sefer Torah, to take out the extra sefer Torah, and then sometimes they have a child, sometimes I would hold it, sometimes the children would hold the sefer Torah, and a lot of times the kids would drop the sefer Torah, and they used to fall apart and got angry. How can you entrust little children's time to hold the sefer Torah, so they have older people hold the sefer Torah? A lot of shuls, they didn't want to install, this guy's here for sleep and this guy's not, so they had a special bench with two holes on the bottom, and you put the terror and it has a little gargle around it so it can't fall down. So the Beis Yosef quotes some Rishonim and Hilchos Beis HaKnesses who interpreted Gemara and Megillah as referring to such a kisei, that Bizman HaGemara had such a kisei to leave the terror standing up. So Moshe Feinstein writes, even though the Beis Yosef writes that some Rishonim say that that was the practice and that's what the Gemara is alluding to, it doesn't appeal to him. He thinks not like those who shine him. That's not the generally accepted shot on that Yimam. He thinks not like those who shine him. He thinks that it's a design of the Kedusha Sefer Torah, that you should just take it out of your own Kodesh and just leave it there. And he thinks that it's proper. The more correct the Recheret to the Sefer Torah is, that you should have somebody hold it the whole time. He thinks you should do away with that institution of the Sabbath. I don't remember if he talks about that. Nothing wrong with children, you just have to have responsible children. Regarding chasenus in the Beis HaKnesses, Rabbi Vadi Yosef has a tshuva, he has tshuvas on everything. So he points out a little bit a humorous point. Apparently, by non-yeshiva couples, when they get married, they kiss each other under the chuppah. So he says, oh, this is terrible, we're going to kiss each other in the shul. They quote the Ramah in Hilchas. I think this is a mistake. I think it's in Tzadik Ches. Sivalik, where the Ramah says that it's not proper to kiss little children in shul. Unless the kid is crying, he hurt himself, and then you kiss him and he stops crying, that's a different thing. You're not really showing affection to the child. That's like your medicine. But although they kiss a Talmud Chacham in shul, like many people kiss the rabbi's hand, that's permissible. But to kiss a child to show, kiss my child to show that I love my child, or the husband is going to kiss his wife under the chuppah. So that's what the Ramah says, that that's not proper, because the Beit HaKnesses should be the place where we only demonstrate Avos HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We shouldn't really demonstrate this. It's not that we have to hate each other in the shul. We should try to love each other as well. But we shouldn't demonstrate any extra signs of affection in the shul. So that's one of the considerations why it's not proper to have a chuppah in the shul. Because we know that they're going to start smooching, and that's against the decorum in the shul. You know, the Gdolim had other reasons why. They said that, the Ramah never has a husband. They need to get married to a Hasid for a Kiyah. So it's not right to get married in the shul. And it's a design of the Beis HaKnesses in the shul, even though it's a Gevaldige Mitzvah to get married, but the shul is only supposed to be used for Torah and Tefillah. So Soloveitchik used to speak about that. He felt that it's not proper to have a wedding in the shul. So Beis HaKnesses is only for Torah and Tefillah.
What about
what? The Shulchan Aruch quotes the Machlokes where the Batei Knesset of Bavel al Tanai Hein Asui, and the Gemara Megillah states that is that only the Tanai is Lacha Churbanim or even the Binyan. That's the Machlokes. So that's not to utilize that cooler, but until the Binyan to use the cooler of using it. So remember, I told you to speak about this by the Balabas and the Maria every so often. So they would always ask them the same question. The same people would always ask the same question. But when you have a brit, everybody always has a brit in the shul. You said you're not allowed to use the shul even for divrei mitzvah. You're only allowed to use the shul for Torah tefillah. That's what creates a Torah and davening. That's the only Torah tefillah. Other divrei mitzvahs also constitute the design of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. They said, but you have a brit in shul. So he said, that's a kula, not a hidur, that you maharet to have a brit in shul. It's really better the earth. It's better to have the brit at home or in a hall. But who's going to come to the bris? All the people who are in shul. So the tichah de tzibura can make everybody schlep to go from the shul to the other place. So we're makel to have it in the shul. He said, if you're having the bris later in the morning, not immediately following the davening, he thought that it's not proper at all to have a nishum. The design of Mishnah Beis Hakmes is to use it for other things, even if the other things are missing.
What about these shoes like that? They are on the wall, and they close the wall, and it looks like a normal. Like, for example, we have in the one or one room in the next to the palace, it's like a closet, and you close it.
If the room is miyuchad for tefillah, then it has the kedushas beis haknesses. Even if you put the wall in front, also don't maintain the kedushas beis haknesses. Room 101. When I was a student here in the yeshiva, used to be a regular classroom. Used to have high school classes there. So it was not miyuchad for tefillah. It had a minyan every so often. When the rebbe would learn in the morning, so the talmidim would daven miyuchad. So it wasn't. I think in the last several years. I think it is miyuchad only for tefillah and for learning. I don't think they have any secular classes. So I think it would have the status of a kedushas beis haknesses even when the door is closed.
Yeah, I know what you
still
campers that have gyms
double with shul and shul double with gyms. So that's exactly it. Yeah. If it's milah tefillah intended to be used for other purposes as well, so never got a kedushas beis haknesses.
Right. If you have a mikveh,
you can
kashrut, right?
Then I have a shul. Part of the room is used for tefillah. The rest of the room is used for other purposes.
No, completely. But like he mentioned, the Aron HaKodesh is completely separated. The full room is done.
Yes, but still, the whole room is the yuchad only for tefillah.
That's right.
The whole room is a beis haknesses, even when you should do something for us. Since the whole room was so many times
to
do
this. But that was put in the yes for shoot, and that was not all your campaign.
I don't think so. Even if it isn't a different shoot, it's still going to have a decision based on that.
How about
having
weddings in like an auditorium or show? Not in the show per se itself, but the show.
Yeah, sure. The only thing is the more correct thing is to have the tachat kitzurakia. So to have the minig, that's a very old minig. Some say that some sages is mana gemara, that's the minig. Put it in the shaman, I think. In order to have the zech and the kol yeh zaracha, like the kol yeh shaman. But it's better if it's a choice between the shul and the gym or the social room. It's better to have it not in the shul. Rashi in Brachas quotes a Tosefta. In the Giver, where the Tosefta says, this is number 21 in the Maamkan, where the Tosefta says that the entrance to the shul should be Mechuvan Keneged the Aron Kodesh. A lot of times they build the shul and the entrance is on the side, like in the main Beit Medrash. It wasn't originally built properly. So the entrance is on the side and the Aron Kodesh is in the front. That's not proper. You're supposed to have the entrance in such a way that if you walk in the door, and everybody's bowing down Moedim or whatever, Shmonesrei, they should be able to bow down. That's a din in Hilchos construction of the Beit HaKnesset. I remember when Rabbi Soloveitchik was learning this Gemara in Maria. Maria was a shul that used to exist. Closed down already. It used to be around Broadway and 80th Street or something like that. So when he was giving the shiur, the shul of Maria didn't have like that. It was like here in the yeshiva. The Aron Kodesh was in the front and the door was on the side. So he said that building was not built originally as a shul. Both originally as an office building, I think, and upstairs and downstairs there were offices. And that office they used as a shul. Not correct. It wasn't built properly.
All the things that you mentioned better not to use the shul. No way to rely on that. There's only a special schmitz for the shots and the shots. And then since they're not praying, then it's time to hope that it's not no longer a thing.
No, he would say that that's still called the shots and the shots. The shots and the shots means that you still plan to use it at some time in the future, reasonably, for a mixture. Yeah, if you still plan to ensure it's still functioning, then it's still called Shas Mitzvah. Mam Shik has a tshuva where he speaks about the importance of having mechitzas to separate between the men's section and the women's section. So he says this is also Zecher LaMikdash, because the Beit HaKnesset and Mishkan Kriyat, he says in the Beit HaMikdash there was a separate section for the men and a separate section for the women. Soloveitchik used to tell you that years ago, in the days of the early Christians, they claimed that historically, in the days of the early Christians, that was the way to tell the difference between a Christian house of worship and a Jewish house of worship, that the Christians had mixed feelings, and the early Christians had mixed feelings. Also because they had this hang-up about the equality of women. They had a tie against the Rabbanim that they're cheating the women. Same today, and belonging today. So that's what the early Christians had a time. So they did away with the separation between the men and the women in the shul. Mr. Rav Soloveitchik was very strong about that. He said, even if the only place that you can hear Tiyah Shofar is Shul, but they have an exceeding, that would be a violation of Kukas HaGoyim. So he said, it's better to forego Tiyah Shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, which is Mitzvah Natorah, rather than participate in the religion, even if you're going to daven at home, but just to listen to this kiyas and the shul with his mixed seating, he held that that was an isa derai. So that's not mishkul kisagoy.
I hear outside that you cannot put up mechitza on a conservative
shul,
but
normally
it's mixed
seating.
And what
the Americans make enough
of
me. You can, they not? You cannot, yeah. Put up mechitza there and just have a regular meeting. The Orthodox Union does it all the time, the MCS1. I don't know. The NCS Y does it a lot of times. They take over a shul for a weekend and they make it into an Orthodox shul for the weekend. And then it's going to, later on, it's going to become again a conservative shul with mixed teams.
What if it becomes, if a rabbi goes there and it becomes, you know, tries to make it into there are shuls that Rabbanim go to where they don't have, is that most of
it? That's a big question. How exactly do you do that? So one of the big success stories was Rabbi Stephen Rifkin, who went to Lincoln Square at a time that they had no mechitza, and he told the Balabatim that he's not going to daven there. He said he's going to daven at home. Or in another minyan, he's just going to preach to them. He preached long enough that he convinced them to make an Orthodox synagogue. And then he was very successful in getting people to be kosher to tshuva in other areas. Yeah. That's the question. Is the rabbi, if he thinks that he'll only succeed in getting them to become Orthodox, if he davens with them, is he permitted to daven with them? That's a serious question. You have to find out who the rabbi is, who the balabatim are, what chance there is of getting anywhere. The rabbi may be fooling himself. Is it permissible to extend the mechitza on Shabbat? Let's say they forgot to put the mechitza by Allah to put up the mechitza on Shabbat. But there's a Ramah in Arachayim where he says that the mechitza, he quotes and says, the mechitza that's only there to see is the Yamah, it's not to be matah something. If you want to be matah, tash v'shamita, because there's a Sefer, there's filling, you put up a mechitza, that's a mechitza hamateris. A mechitza hamateris is also to put up on Shabbat. Oil aroi, tash v'rabbanah. But to put up a mechitza that's only the see is the Yamah, that's muta. So the Ramah says, Mechitza sheforsim bein ha'anoshim ha'anoshim shaz tzidoshu tzachochem, when the rabbi would speak and give musar, give a shir, so they would have a mechitza between the men and the women. Now a lot of places, not only did they not have a mechitza, they had mixed seating. But the Ramah, in the days of the Ramah, they never had that. They had a mechitza between the men and the women, shaz tzidoshu tzachochem. So the Ramah says that that's only the sneer is the yama, that's not called a mechitza mater, so that you're permitted to put up on Shabbos. The question is, what about a mechitza when they want a daven? One had men and women daven, is that called a mechitza materis? And that's the question. Some rabbanim feel that that is called a mechitza materis, but most of the rabbanim, and Rav Soloveitchik thought, most of the rabbanim, I think, feel that that's not called a mechitza materis. Also, it's just a mechitza with sneers the yama. So it's like the Ramah says about the mechitza shepart and shas rosh tachochem, the same as b'shas hastima. There is an interesting essay by Rabbi Henkin's grandson. He entitled the name of his book, Shal Shul is B'nai Bonim. Some people don't like his children, so they call it Shal is B'nai Bonim. They don't call it Shal Shul. So in the first essay in his book, he talks about the common practice of all the shuls in America years ago. He said he speaks to the men's section and the women's section that it was just a curtain. That would be a very light curtain. And the only reason why it didn't blow is because there was no wind, but if, because you had walls around it. But if you wouldn't have any walls and the wind would be blowing, that curtain would be blowing all over the place. He gets all excited about this. The mechitza sheni chalam is the same group of mitsuya, doesn't have the status of a mechitza. So everybody thought that it was a little humorous what he wrote, because if he says it has to correspond to Hilchas Mechitza, Mechitza Meshul is just what he is the Alma. It doesn't have a din of Hilchas Mechitza, it's the Hilchas Shabbos, the Hilchas Eredin. It doesn't have to correspond. He insists, no. And a lot of shuls used to have the curtain between the men's section and the women's section did not reach within 3 tzopim to the floor. So this young Rabbi Herzl Henkin gets all excited in his book about this. He says, the mechitza taluya, it's no good. And the common practice was that it was accepted because it's not a din of mechitza, it's just what's near the yama. So that's what generally assume, must assume that it's permissible to put the mechitza up on Shabbos also because it's only what's near the yama. The women's section of the shul was always assumed to be Mekuvin Kenegah, the women's section of the Beit HaMikdash. The women's section of the Beit HaMikdash only had a Kedushas Har HaBayit, didn't have a Kedushas Har HaZor. That's why the women were permitted to sit. And the men's section had a Kedushas Har HaZor. The men in the Beit HaMikdash were forbidden to sit. Because any Yeshiva HaZor, out of Moira HaMikdash, any Yeshiva HaZor, ever the Malfit Beit Zor HaZor. So they actually thought that that was probably the reason why in Europe where he came from, he never saw, he said when he came to Germany, that was the first time he was shocked to see the minig, that the women would kneel on the floor on Shem Yom Kippur when the Chazan excited to say to Avodah, when they said Alein. He said where he came from in Eastern Europe, he never saw that. But it got him to wonder, when he was in Germany, got him to wonder, why didn't they do it in Eastern Europe? Why did they do it in Western Europe? And who was more correct? So of course, he came to the realization that the minig in Eastern Europe was more correct, where he came from. And he thought that perhaps the reason why was that in the Beis HaMikdash Gufa, the only one to bow down when the Kohanim, HaKohanim Ba'am Ha'omdim Ba'azara, HaYikar Mishtach HaModim. It says only those who are Omdim Azar, because Yishtachvoy is the Kiyum in Migdash only. So the women were not in the Azar, the women who in the Ezra's Nashon has the status of Harabai, they never bowed down. They just said, Baruch Shem Kohen Malchus of the Yerno Boy. He said that's probably why the meaning in Eastern Europe was, that the women in Shul never bowed down, because it's the Dugmat Beis HaMikdash, and Beis HaMikdash, the women never bowed down. So this assumption that the women's section of the Shul is Mechuvan Kenegia the Hara, Kenegia the Kedushas Harabai, and the men's section, Mechuvan Kenegia the Azara, that's why quite a few Achronim hold, Rav Soloveitchik included, but from the Achronim from 100 years ago and earlier, Moshe Hanazabash before, they say that there's a problem of Malam HaKodesh B'loim HaRidim. Let's say they built the shul, and they were guessing how many men would come and how many women, and they put the mechitza like so. And then they realized that there are many more women, and they should really move the mechitza over and take part of the men's section and include it in the women's section. So many possible hold that this constitutes a problem of Malim HaKodesh V'lo Marina. One rabbi called up recently that they have the men's section, women's section, and the mechitza of glass. And they've been using it for a few years, and then they realized that they, because of the sun shining in through the window and the glass, the sun is always shining, the glare is always in the women's eyes. And if the women would be on the other side, where the men would be on the women's side, the problem would be solved. I don't exactly understand how or why, but that was their opinion. So the Shabbos, they allowed to switch the men's section to the women's section to the men's section. If you switch the women's section to the men's section, that's not a problem. That's Malam HaKodesh. The men's section has a higher level of Kedusha, because the Mechubin can get the Azara, but the Shaila is to convert the men's section to the women's section, that's Maridim. So some hold that that's an Issa Deraita. That's an issue of an Issa Deraita. So that's what one of the Rabbanim asked Rav Soloveitchik, what can he do? Rav Soloveitchik told him what I started to say before. He said, the back section where the men, the back few benches of the men's section have the seat to it that the men not going to drive into Colorado. Then the reason is given Alpi Nigma. And then Alpi Nitzar, Alpi Kabbalah, the Achronim give another time why the minig, well, this was a minig, why the minig was adopted to have white talus, not to have a talus of other colors. Because in the Nebuah of Daniel, he describes a vision of an old man wearing a white garment, Lelushi Kislag Chiber, his white garment was white as snow, and Sari Kamanoko, his hair was the color of clean semer, of white wool, and so on, and that's supposed to be a vision of the Ribbon Shalom. That Nebuah is supposed to be a vision of the Ribbon Shalom, and Amar HaMetuah. And in the Kabbalah from the Rabbi Yudachoshit quotes this in the Sefer Hasidim and others quote like this, that the Lavushi Kitzvah Shere Rabbi Yudachoshit writes Sivei Musar in the Sefer Hasidim for those people who, there are a lot of people in America have this minig. They only wear talus on Shabbos. Just that there are people who have a minig, they only wear tefillin on Shabbos. Always long, they don't daven, they don't wear tefillin. On Shabbos they wear talus and tefillin, and they don't. So that's that most people realize there's something wrong with that. But many people in America, I mean, they only wear talus on Shabbos. In the days of the Balayat Taisis, there were many Jews in France and Germany who had such practice. They only wore talus to daven on Shabbos and Yantin. On the weekdays, they didn't wear talus. So if you don't have to complain about this, they had many people didn't wear tefillin at times of the Balayat Taisis. But it's not. Shabbos through France and Germany, giving tachacha about the importance and the significance of tefillin, how important it is, and he has in the Hagadah to his mark, the statement of his gadol. That's the whole brush of the whole pet talk that he gets. We had in recent years, Rav Cook and others had a Masa HaTfilin. They were traveling all over Europe, not to encourage the people to wear tefillin. All the Jews were wearing tefillin, to encourage the people to be biting their tefillin, to make sure that the kasha, that the OCS are kasha, that they're not missing, and so on. That was the origin of the Vada Mishmeres Tamas from Rav Cook's Masa HaTfilin in Europe. I think Chavos Chaim and others encouraged them to go traveling. I gave big drushes, not about the Zahiris of wearing tefillin. Everybody was talking to the religious Jews. They wore the tefillin, but they weren't so medactic on the kashas of the tefillin. In the days of the Rishonim, it was a different story. Many people didn't wear tefillin, so they gave musaf about that, and many people didn't wear talus. They were too much in a rush to make money, whatever. So they only fulfilled the mitzvah of talis on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the Sefer Hasidim complains about that. And he says that the Daniel described in his vision that he saw the Rebbeinu Shlomo wearing this levushi kiflat chiver, the white garment that was white as snow. And that obviously was a talis. And the people who don't wear this talis all week long on the vase of the malbush of HaKadosh Baruch. And that's not proper. So because of this, a tradition that the Mesubalim had, that the nevuah, that the vision that the Neil had of HaKadosh Baruch wearing the white talis, that's another reason, that's Alpinista, why the talis should be, why we insist the talis should be white. So there, Takak Peter, that's a minute that the talis is white. Not Samadai, and you can do whatever you want, but let's say, what color should the shul be? So let the ladies decide what color should the mechitzah be, how tall the mechitzah should be. The rabbi has to have a little bit of a say about that also. But if they want to have it bigger with holes, with this, with designs, whatever, so they should, the women have a right to have a day on that. There are some things that the Baal HaBatim have the right to have a day. The rabbi can't say that everything is a meeting and he can't change anything. That's not so. There are some things that are negotiable and some things that are not negotiable. So that's what I'd like to discuss a little bit. What things are in Harim, what things are dinim, and what things are neither. The Gemara in, you have here in the Marim HaKadosh, it's a long essay about Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Perek Bnei Huir, speaks of the institution of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. But the Gemara never spells out explicitly what is the Gedah HaKdusha, what is it based on. So there is a Ran, in the Ran on the Rif, Masechet Megillah, quotes the Ramban and disagrees with him. Ramban says that a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses simply is that it's a Tashmishin Mitzvah B'Shat Mitzvah. That the shul helps you daven better. Sure, you can daven at home, but if you daven a shul with the mokam amyuchal etzila, will help you to daven better. So it has the status of tashmishe mitzvah, the shas mitzvah. And let's say you have a lulav and an esrog on sukkah. So you have a sukkah that you're sitting in on sukkah. You have a talis. So the Ramban explains in a few places in his commentary on the Gemara that the tashmishe mitzvah have their kedusha. Like Chal Shem Shemayim ala Chagiga, Chal Shem Shemayim ala Sukkah, so the Sukkah has a Kedusha called Man Mitzvah. If the Sukkah is over, you can throw it in the garbage. Fair, so say the Torah Pasim of Yudha, even if it can no longer be used for the Mitzvah, you have to put in the Shem. That's the Brach of Masechet Megillah, the Tashmisha Kedusha on Ignozim, the Tashmisha Mitzvah on Nizrok. And after this Man Mitzvah is over, you can throw it in the garbage. But that's only after this Man Mitzvah is over. After this Man Mitzvah is over, means it's Tzitzis Apostle. Speaking, you throw it in the garbage. There's a machlek, it's a rishayim, and we're machma like the raizit, the shachmar quotes the raizit, as a haichacha from the Gemara in the middle of Masechet Shabbos, that you're not allowed to throw, let's say you have an old talis, you're not allowed to throw it in the garbage together with the chicken bones and the fish bones and the leftover shmout. You should wrap it up in a separate plastic bag and throw it in the garbage. So let's say you have an old lulav that's used for the mitzvah, or an esrog. What do you do with the lulav and the esrog after Yom Tov is over? Many people save it to bake the matzahs with it. Since you use it for one mitzvah, you use it for another mitzvah. If you don't plan to bake the matzahs with it, which we don't plan to do, we're baking matzahs in Manischewitz with electric heat, with gas. We're not going to throw in the loaf in a shrug, and it's going to throw the whole thing off kilter. You can't just throw in whatever you want into the... You can't even throw in whatever you want in the hand shmura places either. They're not going to let you throw in the loaf in a shrug. So it's not really right that they have an old shul with the Rovim and the Esrogim and everything, and all the Hashinahs are sitting on top of the Yom Kodesh. What's the purpose? What does it do? You know, leave things on top of the Yom Kodesh Tamar. The shul looks terrible, no? All the shul looks terrible. They have the Rovim on top. So if you plan to use this to take the matzahs, no, the heck, but we don't plan to do that. No one's going to use it. We should throw it in the garbage. But true, it's not proper to throw it in the garbage together with some old junk that you have. You have some old... textbooks on English literature that you're going to throw out the certain part, you're going to throw it together with the lulav and esrog, maybe that's a bizoyan akdusha, but so you wrap it up nice, and you throw it in a different garbage pail. So that's what the Ramban points out, that tashmishe kedusha has kedusha if, even if it's no longer useful for the mitzvah. The tashmishe mitzvah only has kedusha bizman mitzvah, and after bizman mitzvah is up, it no longer has kedusha. After bizman mitzvah is up, means let's say the talis is possible. Well, it's not possible, but it's so worn out, you bought yourself a new talis, and you're not going to use the old talis, and you're not going to give it to anybody else. That's cool. Achas Mamitzvah, he speaks about a shul. He says, the shul is a tashmisha mitzvah. The called man that is still used for the mitzvah. People still got it in the shul. So it has a kedusha, this man mitzvah. He says, if all the people move out of the neighborhood, they close down the shul, they don't use it anymore. So he says, Nikar Adin, Minatayra, the kedusha disappears. Then it's only the Rabbanon that you have to be paid it, and you have to sell the shul and take the money, use it to buy another shul, whatever. Malam HaKadosh, Shalom HaRidin, all the Gemaras and Megillah, you have to take the money to buy another shul or an Aron Kodesh or something. See, that's important. Sometimes you have people davening in the shul, and they sell, and the president and the board decide they're going to sell the shul. They decide there are not enough people in the neighborhood, and as the people are still davening in the shul, they sell the shul. But the Ramban says that that's out of the question. The whole cool of selling the shul and being and causing the kedusha to shift from the shul onto the money, then the money you're going to use to buy another shul or to buy another kodesh. As I said, that's only, he says, after this man mitzvah is up. The whole kedusha of the Beit HaKnesset is that the shmishay mitzvah, this man mitzvah, so after no one any longer, everybody moved out of the neighborhood, the shul is no longer being used. So the Ramban says, the Minat Torah has no kedusha at all. So you can throw the whole shul out in the garbage in the separate garbage. Not together with the Shema, separate garbage. So then it's a chumrah with the Rabbanan, you should sell it and transfer the kedusha onto something else. But if you're going to sell it under everybody's nose, well, the people are still davening there. So that's the Shema mitzvah, so that doesn't work. It was just a scandalous case like that in Queens, where they sold the shul, the people were still davening there. So that's connected at them. That he can't do.
Well, how do you find money to trust? I mean, obviously, it doesn't, it's not only when people are actually in the shul davening. So
they still plan. Let's say it's a shul which they still plan to use for Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So that's still the money to trust. But if so many people moved out of the neighborhood, it just doesn't make any sense to keep on opening up this shul. You're not going to have a minion anyway. So they should daven in another shul. But then, it's called Lachas Mamisot.
It's
an
objective decision by members.
Some by Rabban. You have to pass in the shadow whether it's still called Mamisot. Some Rabban have to decide. The Balbatan has to tell the rabbis what the situation is, and then somebody has to pass in whether it's called Mamisot or not.
Even
if
the
shul had a
large capacity and now it's only 10,
that's
5,500
now,
only
10,
they're not able to make the payment anymore.
Then you should tell the people to stop davening in the shul. You should make it into Lachas Mamisot. You should make it into Lachas Mamisot. Let's say if you have a shul, we'll get to part of this later. Let's say you have a shul that used to have 500 people davening, and now you only have a minion, and they all daven near the bima, near the Yom Kodesh, and the whole back of the shul is empty. So the back of the shul is Lachas Mamisot. The front of the shul is still this Mamisot. If you have a section of the shul, then no one davens there anymore. So that would be called Lachas Mamisot. That would be an Achkemina. I'll speak about it later. The Ran quotes this Ramban, and he's the Ran in the Gila, and he disagrees with the Ramban. He thinks that the nature of the Kedusha's Beis HaKnesset is not only, it's not simply what the Ramban said, that it's a Tashmishi Mitzvah, this man Mitzvah. He thinks that it's much more than that. He thinks that it has the status of a Tashmishi Kedusha. Because the Gemara in the Gila has its Rosh on the Pasuk and Yechatzel, and the Navi said the Nevuah that the Beit HaMikdash would be destroyed, and Esau would be sent into Golos. The Rabban Shalom told him in Nevuah, but still, the Eilehem LaMikdash Miyat. Even in Babel, they will have a miniature Beit HaMikdash. So the Gemara says in the Gila, what is that alluding to? It refers to the Batik Nesias, the Batik Midrash Hashem of Babel. So the Ran writes that since the Batik Nesias, Batik Midrash are considered by the Navi a Mikdash Miyat, so therefore they have a Kedushas Beit HaMikdash. The only question is whether this means a Drashas Murim and a Torah, or is that only Ask Nachbar? So the Ran himself, who is the Bala member over here, he's the one who develops this whole idea. He quotes the Ramban, says only Tashmishi Mitzvah, only this Mam Sosan, if this Mam Sosan not. Ramban says that it's wrong, if it has the status of Tashmishi Kedusha, it's more than that. He himself happens to say that that's only the Ramban. He says that this whole Drosh of Ayelahem, the Migdash Miyak, referring to Bati Kinesias, or Bati and Drosh of Shabbat Babel, is only in the Ramban. Other Rishonim disagree and think that this is a Drosh of Mura Min HaTorah. Many say that the Ramam holds like that. The Sechemet quotes like that, Rav Soloveitchik used to say like that. The Rambam, in the Minyan HaMitzvahs, in the beginning of the Yad HaZokah, in the beginning of the Yad HaZokah, the Rambam has the brief listing of the Minyan HaMitzvahs. But in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, where he has the Barichas, he doesn't have this line. But in the brief miniature form, in the abridged form of the Minyan HaMitzvahs, when he writes the Lo Sefer, Lo Satan Ken Lashem Alkechem, that's a violation of Meite 7, Min HaMizbeah, so he says, and the same din applies, the one who breaks part of the walls of Batik Nesias, of Batik Midrashas, and it sounds like he's saying that that's a din d'oraita, that the Kedushas Beis HaKnesset and Beis HaMedrash is a Kedusha d'oraita similar to that of the Beis HaMikdash. It sounds like the Rambam holds like the Ran, but even more so, that he holds that Sinat Torah. There are other Rishonim as well. The Sechemet quotes other Rishonim would say like that. There is a Rambam in Hilchas Tefillah, in Perek Yudalef, in Hilchas Tefillah, where it sounds from the wording of the Rambam that if you have a Beit HaKnesset, it will only have a Kedusha Beit HaKnesset if there is an Aron Kodesh with the Sefer Torah there. if you have a shul where they daven and it doesn't have an Aron Kodesh with the Sefer Torah, it won't have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. That's what it sounds a little bit, not explicit in the Rama. That's the Rav Soloveitchik understood the Rama. We once gave a whole Yortzeit Shir on this. The others also read the Rama like that. Not only Rav Soloveitchik. Independently, they read the Rama like that. What could that possibly be based on? The Rav Soloveitchik thought this is all because of the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam in that Minyan HaMitzvahs, that he understood that the nature of Kedushas Beis HaKnesses is like the Ram, but on a level of the Raisa, that it's a Mikdash Miyat. And in the Beis HaMikdash, the Ramban HaKomish says in the Beis HaMikdash, the Iker of the Beis HaMikdash is that it's a Mishkan HaEdus. Mishkan HaEdus means that it houses the Luchas HaEdus. So if you have a Beis HaMikdash without any Luchas in it, so it wouldn't have a Kedushas Beis HaMikdash at all. It's not shy. All Iker of the Beis HaMikdash is that it's a Mishkan HaEdus that houses the Luchas. I, Rav Soloveitchik, when he gave this drasha, he asked, how can it be? But the Baal Sheni didn't have any Luchas. So he said, no, the Rambam says in the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBchira that Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash. He built a special vault in the basement to house the Luchas when the time would come that they would have to put it there. So the Rav Soloveitchik thought that Rambam is quoting a Medrash, so that the Rambam meant to say that when they put the Luchas in the vault in the basement, it wasn't some because they were afraid they were going to steal it, so they hid it somewhere. No, there were two mekaymos for the Luchas. There's one mekaym for the Luchas above the ground, that's in the Kodesh HaKadosh, and then there's another mekaym when the time comes, and you decide you want to put the Luchas somewhere else, so there's another mekaym for the Luchas. And the Rambam seems to be following that opinion. The Gemara Yuma, Daf Nadal, has different opinions. Where were the Luchas during the Baal Shem? Who had the Luchas? So the Gemara has some opinions that it was taken into Bavel. When the Babylonians destroyed the first place of Mimbus, they took it with them to Bavel. And others say no, and that's where the Rambam is a historical question. It's not Shaykh the Pasuk. But the Rambam seems to be assuming that the Luchas were always there in the special vault that Shlomo HaMelech had built when he built the first Beis HaMikdash. And during the whole period of Baruch Sheni, they were there too. So if one assumes like that, you can understand very well that's along the lines of the Ramban. So this is the Ramban, beginning of Parashat Truma, says that the whole purpose of the Beis HaMikdash, the Ika purpose of the Beis HaMikdash, is to house the Luchas. That if one says like that, you can understand very well why the Rambam seems like he says in Hilchot Tefillah that the building, in order to have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, has to have an Aron Kodesh with a... You have to have a Sefer Torah. If you don't have a Malkum Yuchat for a Sefer Torah, so it wouldn't have the status of a Beis HaKnesses. So the Beis HaKnesses has to be a Mikdash Miyat. It doesn't have to have everything that there was in the Beis HaMikdash, but if you're missing the Luchash, if you're missing the Sefer Torah, Ikar Chosme HaSefer, the Ramban describes in Chumash, the Ikar of the Beis HaMikdash was a place that Mishkan HaEdus. So how's the Luchas HaEdus? If you have a Beis HaKnesses for Saturday, say the Torah, that wouldn't have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. That leads us to a question. In some shuls, they want to make things fancy-galancy, so they make the whole Nidrachban smooth. With your Aron Kodesh, so they have it indented in the wall. They have the wall sticks out. And the front of the shul is straight. So that's the question. Do you consider that a room that has the Sefer Torah in it, or you say, no, the Sefer Torah is in a different room that's adjacent. The Sefer Torah is in a room that's adjacent to the shul. So Moshe has a little bit in his paper about that it's not really right to change. Normally in Europe, when I was growing up, all the shuls had a front wall of Mizrachvan, then had an Aron Kodesh in the shul, the Aron Kodesh protruded, so the Aron Kodesh with the Sefer Torah was in the shul. And now a lot of the shuls want to make things fancy, so the whole Mizrachvan is straight and smooth, and the Aron Kodesh with the Sefer Torah is in a different room. Okay, so this is fixed that over there. That's the question, if that's proper. That may be a shinui from the minute. It may be a shinui from the din. It may be that it turns out you're going to have an Aron Kodesh without a Sefer Torah.
There are some shuls that have the
wall
where we keep all the Sefer Torah
in pure effect, and then only on Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, they bring the Aron in the room where they are, and the whole room is in the room. So during the rest of the week, that still has the Sefer Torah in the Gemara. The question, from the Gemara, it would appear, not exactly the way I'm presenting it so simply, from the Gemara, it would appear, like in the second Beit HaMikdash, where were the Luchas? The Luchas in the basement. Alright, so the Luchas weren't in the same room. So the answer is no, but that's part of the structure. The Lechatchil of Shlomo HaMelech made that vault in the basement in order to house the Luchas, so that's the proper moment. The Gemara would appear that it was a very common practice with Man HaMaroyim that they had the Aron Kodesh with the Sefer Torah in a different room in the building. They didn't have it in the normal shul. Maybe because of theft, maybe in the high time. The Gemara doesn't say why, but it seems to Gemara that they always used to bring the Sefer Torah from a different room. So as long as there is a Makom Kavua in the building, it would appear to the Gemara that it is okay.
The next door, the next floor house.
That's the question. That's the question. That may, he may not have any choice. If you're afraid of him, he may not have any choice. It's better to have you say the peri than not.
But I think the basic message of Kurva in the Yeram Mika has in, built in the Yeram Kodesh, and I think that's the basic message for the
really?
Process. I don't know if that's the original vineyard.
That's not the Rabbi Yehuda Chassid that I mentioned. That's not the one from the Beit HaChassid. It's another Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. Right. Another person. He was a religious man. But it wasn't
the same.
Right. It wasn't the same one who wrote. Okay. That could well be. There's another issue that was raised because of the Beit HaKnesses in the Churva, I think. I think that's the one. And maybe it's another shul that they have around. And a whole bunch of Rabbis. I mean, it's like Kodesh all in a row. Around five in a row. Six in a row. All in the front. One of those shuls there in Iraq. So that's a shaila, is that permissible? One of the local rabbis had in his shul had an Aron Kodesh, and then a Baal Bas decided he wants to donate an Aron Kodesh, but they have an Aron Kodesh, he wants another Aron Kodesh. When are they going to put another Aron Kodesh? Put two in the front. One is over there, one is over there. He wants to give another Aron Kodesh. So he went to ask Rabbi Soloveitchik, and he told him that he doesn't think it's permissible. And he mentioned that Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Korach says that we, the Jewish people, we have one God, we have one Aron Kodesh, we have one Kohen Gadol, that's all, we don't have, everybody's going to become a Kohen Gadol. Everybody wants to become a Melech, a Kohen Gadol. We have one God, one religion. So that's the question, to have more than one Aron Kodesh. I have it there, it's a very old shul, seems that they had it for quite a while. It's a little different over there, because there they have in this shul, in Yirat Yikah, they have all the Aron Kodesh are touching each other. So typically that's considered like one long Aron Kodesh, but if you have a pause, you have a break in between, then it is a question. And maybe that it's improper. Not so question. Maybe that it's not permissible to have two Aron Kodesh. That's the Rav Soloveitchik.
What about
the
Kodesh? Is there quite a few Aron Kodesh when you go inside?
You mean they're different, each one's a different minion. Because they want to have a different minion, yes. It's not really one... It has the Kodesh of Beit HaKnesses, because it's Meyuchas Tefillah. In fact, the post can point out that even the back part, just like you're not allowed to shmooze the bantayim in a shul, so you're not allowed to talk, the whole rachabat hakotel, all the way till the back, all the way till the staircase that goes up, you're not allowed to talk because since on Yomim Neroim, or on Yomim Tavim, the whole place is packed. So even though all year long the people don't daven, they only daven all the way up in the front, but there are no walls that are mafsik. There are no mechitzus that are mafsik. Since the karka goes straight, there are no mechitzus that are mafsik.
But there is a wall on the back.
A little bit, I'm not sure. Is it a... I haven't been there a long time. Is it a real wall?
Yeah.
A deep
building. There's a way to get... There's a doorway for it to get up. Where the stairs are. The first initial part is right at the plaza.
Right.
Rachalat HaKotel, the wall behind that.
Okay. But the whole plaza, even though the people don't only daven in the front and the back, they're not davening, that whole plaza that's flat, up until you reach a wall, since sometimes, if you have, let's say, a room where the people only daven over here, they never daven in the back, so the back doesn't get a vision, they take up necessary as opposed to one room. But if once in a while they daven to the extent of the whole room, and there's no wall that's not fixed, even on the occasion 99% of the time that they're only davening in the front, the Magen Avraham quotes the Tshuva Sachrayim, the Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. I think the Mabit, the Marit, that the whole extension, the whole area has its Tshuva Beis HaKnesses. That's what the Pesukim point out. At least the whole front area of the Rahmat HaKotel has its Tshuva Beis HaKnesses, because sometimes they daven, they fill up the whole spot, the whole area.
What
are
shuls that people daven in the hallway,
like,
kind of come back of the door, and they sort of hear what's going on? Very good. Is that hallway area people
down
there outside the actual
shul? This whole discussion is based on the Gemara and Megillah discusses what about the streets of the city? Should they have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses in the streets because of the fact that on a tiny sigur they daven in the streets. Sometimes they daven in the Toi Shabbat, they daven in front of Beis HaKnesses Agro, everybody davens outside. So does the street have a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses? So the Gemara says no, but that's only the Ikroi V'Yalma. Since they don't daven the big sea, it's not. And then the Magen Avraham quotes from the Pesukim, that's because there are walls that are mafsik. But if there wouldn't be any walls, then you would have one stretch of an area where you daven the sea in one part, and the rest you daven the kroy, and the rest of it. But then the rest of it, the whole extension would have the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses all year long, even when you're not davening there. The Maharam Shik has a discussion of the importance of having the shul face Mizrach, or whatever direction you're going to daven facing. The din is that you have to daven Shmoneh Esrei facing Beis Hamikdash, facing Eretz Yisrael. So wherever you live on the globe, you have to decide which direction is Eretz Yisrael. Imam Sheikh has a tshuva where he points out there's a machlokes achronim. What does that mean exactly? Does it mean you should just face, let's say you live, generally speaking, you live west of Eretz Yisrael. So you should daven facing east, or should you daven southeast? Exactly towards that direction. He quotes the machlokes achronim about that. But it's clear that the Aron Kodesh should be in that direction where everybody's going to daven, so everybody will be davening Shmoneh Esrei facing the Aron Kodesh. The Mishnah Brura has a question. There's a contradiction in the Mishnah Brura, in fact. In the Shona Halachas, by the disciple of Sangri, has a Kitzur of the Tiske on Mishnah Brura. Every so often he points out theories, so he points out there's a contradiction in the two parts of the Mishnah Brura. Mishnah Brura is written by a group of different people. Different parts were written by different people. That's how that Rav Chaim Sun points out. And in the biography that he wrote about his father. So he points out, and that's the terrors to a lot of theorists in the Mishnah Brura. He gives an example. It was Hilchos Shabbos, there's a contradiction. He says, that was written by my brother-in-law, that was written by my uncle, and that was written by this one and that one. You can tell this, the styles are completely different. Like in Hilchos Sukkot, the Bir Allah has all told them, like I'm in Haskinos. And the first Chelek Aruch Chaim is bland. In Hilchos Shabbos, in Hilchos Erevin, it's very bombish, but it's not like I'm in Haskinos. Very different styles. The different parts are clearly written in Smuchas Mishaycha, that is written by different people, different style Hebrew, different style learning, very different. Chofetz Chaim was the general editor of the whole thing. So every so often there is theory. So either there's theory in Hilchos Tefillah. What happens is you have a shul where the Aron Kodesh is not in the right direction. The Aron Kodesh is not in the direction where you would have been davening. You would not have davened in that direction, because that's not towards Eretz Yisrael. But they put the Aron Kodesh in the wrong direction. So is the din now that you should daven facing the Aron Kodesh? Or is the din that you should daven facing Eretz Yisrael? You should ignore where the Aron Kodesh is. That's the shayla in the old Beit Midrash. The Aron Kodesh is in the wrong direction. So this is Tzir in the Mishnah Brura. Then Tzir has a tshuva about this in the Eish HaZohar that Rav Henkin refers to, but Rav Henkin wanted to learn in Balashim. I don't think he ever got there. He wanted to, as a child, he wanted to learn in Balashim. His father couldn't afford it. He never got to learn it. His father couldn't afford, there was no tuition. There was also no tuition. But his father couldn't afford traveling expenses. So he, the Rav Henkin in the Eidus Liso refers to the Nesiv Tshuva, but he doesn't talk like the Nesiv. The Nesiv quotes Magen Avraham. And he says the din is that you just ignore where the Aron Kodesh is, and you face the correct direction. You're supposed to face Eretz Yisrael, not, irregardless of where they happen to put the Aron Kodesh. But you learn the Gemara and Brachas in the first parak, it looks like this is really a Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Brachas Dalvav on the base is a Rashi, a Gemara with the Rashi and the Tosfos is printed on Dalvav on the Aleph, it really belongs to Dalvav on the base. So that sounds like a Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi seems to learn that you should put the Aron Kodesh, the Chatzilah, the Aron Kodesh should be placed in that direction where you're supposed to face Eretz Yisrael. But if you put the Aron Kodesh in another direction, then the din requires you're supposed to face the Aron Kodesh. And Tosfos doesn't understand what in the world Rashi's talking about. So he says, no, you're supposed to face Eretz Yisrael, even if the Aron Kodesh sounds like even the Aron Kodesh in the wrong way. But then it says that in Shulchan Aruch, when they quote this Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, and the Mechaber quotes Rabbi Yehuda, you should always avoid getting involved in the Machlokes. Whenever there's a Machlokes, Harishayim, Shulchan Aruch would usually recommend to avoid getting involved in the Machlokes. So Pashtetim, that you should put the Aron Kodesh in such a way that you shouldn't get involved in the Machlokes. But the Shulchan Aruch is wrong. Kodesh put in the wrong direction. So what do you do? Bottom line, how do you pass him? And the Tzitz says, he passed him like Tzitz, he passed him like the Magen Avraham, which says that you ignore where the Aron Kodesh is.
I learned that the Tzichtam Sefer that talks about the question, and he said that it's, let's say, not exactly east. It's north or west or south, then you shouldn't face the Aron Kodesh. But if it's sort of east, like let's say Eretz Yisrael southeast, so you know, everything can't be reductive, but if it's sort of east, then you should face the Aron Kodesh. I don't know if that's
the time. Could be. That's what the Maram Sheik has in that shuvah, number four. That's what he talks about.
Well, the
Maram Sheik
in terms of davening will face east, or exactly.
Right.
Has
I think he says, Machatkhila should try to have this exactly, but if not, so you rely on the other thing.
Let's say the shul is. What's the shul is davening on north, and that's during Kedin. You can't daven east.
Right, that's what Dachranin points out. So, Amed Ramamurim, when do you say that you follow Tosis, that you should face Eretz Yisrael? That's if everybody in the shul is going to face Eretz Yisrael. But if everybody in the shul is going to daven facing the Aron Kodesh, you're going to be the only one who knows the secret. that the Nisi wrote a tshuva, and I think we're both Nisi's tshuva, that you got a down taking out still. So they're going to down one way, you're going to down another way, so that's not permissible. That for sure is not permissible. That's what their hater writes like that. The hater written. Mishnah Berurah quotes that in the behavior. But the shaila is, what if you can convince everybody to face the right direction? Should you or should you not? But that would depend on Rashi and Taisus, and you really should avoid getting involved in Machlokes, Rashi and Taisus. But if you can't avoid it, so then bottom line, be pasuk like Taisus, don't be pasuk. There is a Gemara in Beit Adaf Yudalar on the base, but the Gemara, the way Taisus interprets the Gemara, is saying, why is it forbidden to make curtains out of shatnas? Shatnas is only forbidden if you wear it as clothing, but what's wrong if you have a drape? And made out of kilayim. So the Gemara says, because sometimes when there's no steam in the house and people are chilly, Hashamish is chamim kineg. Sometimes the shamish never have a poor guy, the waiter in the house, but one of the workers in the house can't afford to have warm enough sweater or clothing, so he may be chilly and he may wrap himself up in the curtain. So because there's a possibility that he may be in violation of wearing the kilayim, so he's not allowed to wear, not allowed to make curtains out of kilayim. So the question is, does this chashash apply in shul? I think Mrs. Hershkowitz, who runs the museum across the street, Julia Hershkowitz said, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that 98% of all the parochas in America are shatnas. That normally they make a parochas from shatnas unless you place a special request. If you ask them, they won't make it from shatnas. But if you don't tell them one way or the other, they will make your parochas from shatnas. Why in the world do they do that? So on the side of the Yerideya, in Yerideya Simon Shin Aleph, that's in Hukas, Kalayim Sifid Aleph, there are more rites such a meaning that they make parochas from shatnas. On the side, they mention a meaning to have a zechel amigdash, because in the Beit HaMikdash there was shatnas, and the big dikunin and the parochas as well. To make a zechel to the Beit HaMikdash, the Beit HaKnesset, the Mikdash Miyad, so that's why they had such a meaning to institute shatnas. The question is it permissible or not? Are you allowed to do it? Oh, so then the Gilyan Marshor of Shlom Eger on the side of the Yerideya, they quote from Achrayim who say that the reason why it's permissible is simple, because it's a tashlishik dusha. The parochas, the Gemara says in Megillah, the parochas in front of the Yom Kodesh has a status of tashmish kedusha. You're not allowed to be miskamen kinegda. Even if you're chilling, you're not allowed to wrap yourself up. Plus, you're afraid you're going to die. Nothing comes to flush, so you can violate the Yisrael HaNor of tashmish kedusha as well. But if no chashash takone, you're not permitted to wrap yourself up in the parochas in the shul. But since it has a status of tashmish kedusha, so the chashash of hashamish miskamen kinegda doesn't apply. So the question is that maybe Bizman Azeh, this no longer applies. Because the meaning in Europe in many communities was that they used to use a paroiches for a chuppah. You used to take down the paroiches in front of Yom Kodesh and put four poles. In fact, a lot of paroiches were manufactured in the Hatzila with rings on the four corners. Again, several years ago they had a display here in the museum, so they showed different paroiches. But many, many paroiches used to, I remember as a child, a lot of times they used the paroiches to shtel a chuppah. They didn't have these fancy chuppahs like that. They used to take a chuppah all the time and put up a chuppah. So the chuppah used to consist very often of the parochas in Shulam. They had special rings in the four corners. And many of the other parochas that they had on display in the museum had slits in the four corners, so that they would put the pole under the parochas, and they gave a whole head. But why? Because some of the Achrayim insist that it has to be constructed like a Tzuras HaPesach. So it can't be Miratzad. The pole has to be under the part of the roof. It can't be on the outside. If you have a ring on the four corners, so the pole is going to be a little bit off. It's going to be like an inch or two away. It's going to be held with the ring, but it's going to be an inch or two away from the roof, from the ceiling on top. So the meaning in Europe in many communities for several hundred years was that people used the parochas for other purposes. So the question is, how is it permissible if it really has a status? Mark says the parochas from shul has a status of tashmish kedusha. So you look into the Gemara Megillah, the friend points out, look into the Gemara, you'll understand why. The Gemara asks the question, why does the parochas have the status of tashmish kedusha? After all, the guf kedusha is the state of Torah. The Aron Kodesh is a tashmish kedusha, it's mishamish the state of Torah. And the parochas in front of the Aron Kodesh is a tashmish to tashmish. And the Gemara has a rule that only tashmish, only guf kedusha has kedusha state of Torah. Or tashmish kedusha, let's say, a mental of her state of Torah, and Aron Kodesh, a tefillin zekel, or the cardboard boxes, a cover of tefillin, or the mezuzah cases, a cover of mezuzah. But let's say if you have a tashmish, the tashmish, so then, let's say I have a tefillin zekel, and then I have another plastic cover to cover the tefillin zekel that it shouldn't get rubbed out. So the plastic cover is a tashmish, the tashmish. That doesn't have the kedusha. After the plastic clears, you can throw it out in the garbage. If you have your tefillin held directly in a plastic container, even after it tears, you have to put it in the shemus. But that plastic container has a status of tashmish kedusha. If you have a kashmish to kashmish, it doesn't have any conditions. So the Gemara Megillah asks, why do we assume that the parosis in front of the Aron Kodesh has the status of tashmish kedusha? Isn't it a tashmish to tashmish? It simply covers the Aron Kodesh, which holds the Sefer Torah. It's twice removed from the Sefer Torah. So the Gemara answers no, because when they take the Sefer Torah out to lane and they're going to lay it on this table, they're not going to put the Sefer Torah directly down. So if they don't have a special cloth cover for the Shulchan to lay, they're going to take down the Parochas, put it on the Shulchan, and put the Sefer Torah directly on top of the Parochas. It's because of that reason that the Parochas has the status of Tashmishi Kedusha, because they would often use it to cover the Shulchan, to put the Sefer Torah directly on top of it. So the Achareinim write that in later years, in the last several hundred years, they no longer had that practice. When the yeshiva, when there's no cover on the Shulchan, you take a talis and you put it down. No one in his right mind takes down the Parochas. Never saw anybody take down the parochas, put it on the shulchan. But since it never happened, so the parochas is man and little, they have several hundred years, less thousand years maybe, no longer has the status of tashmish kedusha. It's only tashmish to tashmish. So once you assume that it's tashmish to tashmish, then if someone is chilly, strictly speaking, can walk up to the Aron Kodesh and shul, wrap himself around. So if the hashash of shema, hashamish yitzchamim kenegdo does apply, then maybe it should be forbidden nikar adin, the 98% of the parochas that have to line, maybe it's also. Because of the hashash and his family. So that's a machlekes on achrayim. When the Ramah says there on Yeruday, you're permitted to make a parochas out of shashmas because the hashash doesn't apply, what did he mean? So Rav Shlomegi quotes on achrayim to say, if the hashash doesn't apply because it's utter al tibin, the din is kamish and egg because it has a status of tashmishi kedusha. But with man is that where it does not have that status, so then it would be utter to make it to the point. Another achrayim says, no. The Ramah just says, who ever heard a person walking into the shul to wrap himself in the parochas? Even if it's mutter, no one does it. The chashash doesn't apply mitzvahs, not the chashash doesn't apply al pidin because it's tashmish kedusha and it's also. Even if you live in a time that the parochas is a tashmish to tashmish, it does not have the status of tashmish kedusha. Still, no one in his right mind would do it because the chashash doesn't apply. So it's mutter to make such a vilon, to make such a curtain out of shabbos. So that's a big machlokes achrayim, whether it's permissible. So the sum of the proper thing is, as long as Dafka make a zecher on mikdash, that's an obscure on the side of the Yeruday. That's an obscure Rachman that says that. That the Dafka to make a zecher on mikdash, you make shatnas and parochas. The pashtus is that it's recommended not to make it out of parochas. Speaking of the parochas, Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva which is a little questionable. We were just in the Beit Hamedrash when Mr. Goetz paid for parochas, and the young Tzadik had two parts, and it opens. And it opens by the two parts separating from each other. So Moshe has the truth about that. He says that that's kineged haminik. You can't say a din. What's a din? A hilchos parochas. You can have an aron kodesh without a parochas also. In Italy and other countries, they have aron kodesh without any parochas. They have several yeshivas in the United States that have an aron kodesh without a parochas. But the question is, if you are making a parochas already, is there anything wrong with making two parochas? It doesn't have to be one. So Moshe says that's kineged haminik. The meaning was you have one parochas for the zechel of Beit HaMikdash, and Beit HaMikdash is one parochas. And you're not allowed to make two. And other things for the Ramayisha would say, what do you mean the Beit HaMikdash there was one? There was two. And Gemara says there was two. There was two parochas. What do you mean there was only one? And even if there would have been one, who says that has to be Zeichel HaMikdash? That's getting back to the first Teichemet that we mentioned, and number one. In order to determine whether something is a meaning or not, you can't ask the Balabatim. Of course, the Balabatim will all say that we never heard of such a thing. There's only one parochas. Never had two that separated. They never had two because it's a slightly more complicated pulley system to have the two parochas open up to the two sides. But the question is this really a minig? Is this constitute a minig to have only one parochas? No, that was a hechachimtzus. You want to have two. So that's the question. Moshe holds that this is part of the minig, and others Jesus is true that it's not part of the minig. Many shuls, they make all kinds of fancy designs. In the Bayit Rishon, there was a thick wall. There was an amethyst. And then the Bayit Sheni, there was a stupid, whether the thickness of the wall had the status like Kodesh HaKadoshim or like outside, like the Hekel. That's why the Mishnah says in Yom, the Bayit Sheni, they had two parochas, which had an amethyst in between, and that amethyst was a stupid, it was a stupid. So there were two parochas. Yes, not like ours, that there were two that separated like that. But still, there were one in back of the other. And there was at one end, there was no parochas in front, there was no parochas in the back. You see that sometimes if you see that you can have more than one. So what do you think of
that? Sorry, they shouldn't have a parochas. And then a door is in back of it. That's more like a mikdash.
there was, but they had a mikdash, it's not like having problems with doors in the back of it. Right? Mm-hmm. So whatever your shulchan is.
Yeah. What designs you're allowed to put on your paraitas is not so cautious. A lot of shuls, they run out of ideas. So they have these angry lions. You look in the shul in Great Man, they have these angry lions looking at each other, just angry at everybody. Funny designs that they have or they have Yud Beis Mazalot. Some shuls here in Groyas, they have the Yud Beis Mazalot. Sometimes they write Stukim on the paraitas. Here in Groyas, they have a lot of times that Stukim. So every yontif, they have another paraitas for the pasuk for that yontif. But the Magen Avraham says that that's Kenegin Hadin. People have been violating that for a long time. Magen Avraham says that's Kineged Adin. The Gemara says explicitly in Gittin Daf Samach, you're not permitted to write less than a pasuk, less than a Sefer Shalom. You're not allowed to write less than a Sefer Shalom. So they used to make designs in Sukkot and designs on Tefillin Zek or Talit Zek or Yashalayim Tzitzis or Dilim Tassalah or something like that. On an Esrog box, they would engrave a pasuk or a phrase on pasuk. So the Magen Avraham says that all of this is Kineged Allah. You're not permitted to write less than a Sefer Shalom. Umar just has a machlokes. What about the children who go to cheder? And the Rebbe wants to teach Parshas Lech Lecha. You can make the kids schlep a chumash bereishis every day to school. Maybe you can print a Parshas Lech Lecha. Maybe you can just write a Parshas Lech Lecha, and to make it easier for chinuch purposes. But Umar has a machlokes, and the Shulchan Aruch has a machlokes for educational purposes. But the Kosefim Megillah Latinus with Islamic boy. Are you making on this Easter a writing lesson in Sefer Shalom for educational purposes? Even on the Shulchan Aruch, say lechumre. The Shach goes to Bach that the minig is lahakim. Yes, that's for educational purposes. What's the educational purpose over here? You're going to write on the paroches. You're going to write on the mental of the Sefer Torah v'yahapta racha kamoicha. Gemara says, refers to Brola Mitzvah Yochas. What, you're going to accomplish so much educationally that you're going to get all the people, if you would get all the Balabatri to love each other. Okay, that's Givaldus. I wonder how much hashkoa does it really have there. Every mental you have another pasuk with, and every paroches you have another pasuk with. So how much most of the people don't take notes of the psukim at all. It's hard to say that that's really for educational purposes. That's the head of Kosher and Megillah, the Tinnus and Spam. So the Pashtus is it. That falls back into the Yisr of the Gemara and Gittin. You're not permitted to write less than a Sefer Shalom.
Maybe when I heard Psalms, for example, wedding invitations, they usually say the promise to write a pasuk because the shame is promised. They never say the problem because they're afraid that it's going to be thrown away, so don't write a pasuk.
Those are two problems. There's one problem, right? The Magen Avraham in Hilchos Sukkah says there are two problems, having designs. The one problem is it's less than a Sefer Shalom, and it's not for an educational purpose. Secondly, it's going to rain, it's going to fall on the floor, it's going to be Herlich Liban, it's going to be thrown in the garbage. That's the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Sukkah. We give the Rabushi Surah. Explains the Magen Avraham that he's giving two distinct reasons. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. We talked about the wedding invitation. That's what I quote over here. Igros Moshe. And number nine, he says it's not proper to write the psukim because the people are going to throw the invitations in the garbage and not going to put it in the shames. And the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that the seven days in the Megillah Sinai, they have a list of all of the holidays that were instituted during the period of Bayi Sheni of celebrating different things. So one of the holidays was the Telas Atkarta Min Shtaraya, when they stopped writing the Shem Hashem in the Shtaraya. They used to write in the Shtar, I borrowed money from you, and they would write the date. Instead of writing how many years it is with Bria Toilam, or writing 1992, they would write how many years it was since the Kohen Gadol Lekel Elyon took office. And they would write, who Kohen Lekel Elyon? So then when the Chob would be paid, they would rip up the Shtar and throw it in the garbage, and it had Kel Elyon. So the Rabbanim, the Balabatim was very firm. They always wanted to write who claimed the Kehel. The Rabbanim tried to get the Balabatim to stop writing all the frum shtick in the story, and the Balabatim didn't listen. So when they finally convinced the Balabatim to leave out the frum shtick, they made the yontif because they left out, there would be less bizoyan shem Hashem because the people wouldn't have any more stories to throw in the garbage that had shem Hashem. So Moshe writes that's the same regarding the wedding invitation. He writes that Nikar Adin, he thinks that he's permitted to write the phrases, let's say, Kol Kosom, Kol Simcha, Kol Chasom, Kol Kalo. That's an expression that appears in Tanakh. He thinks Nikar Adin, that's Mutter. He writes that he personally was Machma not to do that either, not even to write phrases. So he says, writes in Gittin, in the first paragraph, that you're not permitted to write spooking anymore. He says, you're not permitted to write spooking in a piece of paper without Sirtut, without having a line there. Unless, they quote the name of Rabbeinu Yom in Paris, unless you're just writing biblical expression that the Seris Haloshin only is a Melitza. Say I'm writing a letter and I write, I'm soon going to get married and it's going to be Kol Tzotzim Kol Simcha Kol Chalsim Kol Kal. I'm not quoting a pasuk. It happens to be a biblical expression. So if you're writing biblical expressions, just that the Seris Haloshin, the Melitza of the Alma, then the Rabbeinu Yomi Pari says that it's mutter, that you don't need any spiritual. That's what Moshe says Nikra, that he thinks that it's mutter to throw that in the garbage also, but he personally does machma on that as well.
That's not a Sefer Shalom problem.
It's not a Sefer Shalom problem either, apparently, because it was never intended as a quote from the post. It was intended as a melitza. It happens to be, that melitza happens to be based on Tanakh. Yeah, melitza is based on Shakespeare, based on Tanakh, based on Milton, based on Gemara, based on Pirkei Avos, based on Siddur. There are all kinds of melitzas. So just because this melitza happens to be from Tanakh, he's quoting less than a Sefer Shalom. No. If he quoted Lushane's quote from Tanakh, then you have to have a minimum of a Sefer Shalom.
Were Moshe, based on
Yisrael,
writing
Moshe's Sefer Shalom? No, he doesn't talk, I don't think he brings that up in his children. He just talks about throwing it in the garbage. But you have the Mavin Avraham and Hilchas Sukkah quotes to both considerations, both the throwing in the garbage and the left in the Sefer Shalom. A lot of people, a lot of shuls, they make designs on the mental lock of the Sefer Torah. They have lions, happy lions, angry lions, whatever. They have youth based mazalas. So to make youth based mazalas, that says the Sefer that it's forbidden. But to make angels, I remember he used to dive into my father's shul in Philadelphia. He had big paintings, like it was like a Michelangelo painting on the ceiling. It was I was a very young boy. So it could be, I don't remember. It could be it was so tall. But I remember this, the shul was like 10 flights, 10 stories tall. And there were paintings of the three angels coming to Avraham Avinu and paintings of Yanke fighting with an angel. All kind of paintings all over the shul. So to paint a picture of an angel, Satan did that. It's awesome. Yomar Rosh Hashanah, Yomar Nadim Zara has a whole studio. That's forbidden. Or to paint the Yud-based mazalas is forbidden. To have all the Yud-based mazalas together is forbidden. There's even one opinion, the Shach quotes from the other day, to make lions on the Aron Kodesh. That was a common practice all over. They had lions holding up the Aseret HaDibur in front of all the Aron Kodesh. So the Shach quotes an opinion from the Bach, that any one of the Yud-based mazalas is up. Not only all the Yud-based mazalas, the Hadi Hadadi, you can make any one. The Marshal, for years and years, we used to learn the yeshiva, and we never realized that there were Yud-based mazalas on the floor as you walk into the front lobby, because it was so dirty then. Yochum Malach Harish, Dr. Lane Cabon, came in as the president, whenever it was, 15 years ago, and he wanted them to wash the floor. So he washed the floor. Lo and behold, we found out that they had Yud-based mazalas on the floor. That's Kenegad Adin. You're not allowed to make that. Many Batikin Yeshivas and Eretz Yisrael that they discovered from 2,000 years ago. From the Zman Abayis, after Zman Abayis, many shuls have like that. Morris says that Kenegad Adin, you're not permitted. It was Baba Batim. Didn't they say Rabbi? They did Kenegad Adin. Yeah. But even to make one of the Yud-based mazalas, let's say just to make a lion, so the Shach, well, the Shach doesn't accept it, but he quotes in the name of the Bachta Chachumah, just to make lions alone is the question.
Any difference
for the protruding
or just flattening?
I don't think so. I think Tosis is right that when it gets to the mazalas, it seems when we look at the sky, it appears to us as if everything is flat. So since that's the impression that we have, that's our perception, so it's forbidden to make it even if it's flat.
That's a line.
Also.
Because the line is three-dimensional. If they're flat,
no, those who hold that lines are Russia, because lions, Arya is one of the U-based Mazalas, and any one of these based Mazalas is Russia. So then they say the Mazalas are Russia even if they're flat. The days of census you used to have in the Mazar, we have it also. When you bench Talon, you bench Geshem, has a lot of Mazar, has used base Mazar. The census used to have Goyim do that. The Goyim used to do the engraving. Because the Jewish didn't to make it base Mazar. I am Amir ben Nachri, that's a Machlek is a Rishayin, but Amir ben Nachri is Musa Bishari Surim. The Mar in Bab Messiah Dab Tzadik, they used to have an Ibad Lev Shita. The census in the right is they didn't start to say, yes, you're not going to make you base Mazar, because you've got Ibad Lev Shita. And the Rambam reinterprets that Ibad Lev Shita that it's not so. There is no such thing. Pardon? What's the reason for? Yudayt Mazalas. The Pashup Shat is, they explained that in the Sukhya in Rosh Hashanah, it seems that it's a Nisim and Atar. Pashup Shat is because of the.